somebody to the first session or the first day of this year's annual Professional Development Week. And before we start, we have been asked to remind people that in this room we should be using lids on all our drinks. They don't want to clean the carpet after everything. And to start this week, I'd like to introduce the first presenter, project manager Ira Revel, who works in IRIS, and she's talking about building collaborative digitization projects using Contentia. Ira.
First of all, I want to say thank you guys for coming, and some of you came a little bit early. Even 2 minutes late is a little bit early, as we sort of work the kinks out for the first presentation of the week. Today I want to illustrate to you why Content DM, Digital Collection Management System, is a platform of choice for the Historically Black College and University Library project here at Cornell. The short name of the project is the CUL HBCU Digitization Initiative. Okay. First, I'm going to begin by providing you with an overview of the project. Next, I will define Content DM and its origin. After that, I will present several issues involved with this collaborative digitization initiative by taking a look at our technology needs and the prevailing factors in our decision to use Content DM. Next, if time permits, and I'm hoping that our server in Atlanta is working properly, you know how demos go. If time permits, I'll be able to demonstrate a couple of features of Content DM. And finally, we'll take a look at a couple of projects that are actually deploying Content DM and how they've implemented the product. So first of all, what is the HBCU CUL Digitization Initiative? Our overarching goal is to link digitized collections that are found at historically black colleges and universities through a shared web access portal. Some very specific objectives of the project include training, consultation, and workflow support to library staff at HBCUs. The project was funded by an Andrew W. Mellon Foundation grant. The goal of the project, as I mentioned before, is to link these digitized collections through Content DM. The objectives of the project, as you can see, the first few, to build a cadre of HBCU library staff who have been taught digital imaging. Second, to construct digitized collections at each of the 10 participating institutions. And third, to create a plan for a cooperative HBCU Library Alliance digital library built on these digitized collections. The final thing that I don't have up there, because we're actually working, it's a little less tangible because the result of it will be a report, is to create a plan for cooperative digitized collections, which have been contributed by historically black colleges and universities. So we're working actively with our advisory committee. We just recently had our second advisory committee meeting on May 10th. So who's involved in the project? Our major partners, like many collaborations, there may be one main partner or primary investigator, as is the case here at Cornell, and one or more partners. In this case, if you look at the project from an administrative perspective, there are at least, I believe, 13 subcontracts associated with the project. So if you see me running around or you don't see me at all, and if I appear to be losing hair, that is the reason why. As you can see here, two of our major partners, Cornell, of course, considers itself a partner in this grant. We wanted to be very careful to make sure that the HBCUs own the project, because after we're done with our component, they're going to have to carry on the activities involved in the project. So we're responsible for project administration. That's those 13 subcontracts I mentioned. Project management, we're responsible for training, consultation, and workflow support. In terms of training, we offered a 5-day workshop based on the moving theory into practice digital imaging tutorial, and that was in November. We had about 20 participants in that workshop, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec. The other major partner is the HBCU Library Alliance, and the Alliance supports training and meeting logistics, so for advisory committee meetings, they actually help set up logistics for that, since all of our meetings are in Atlanta. And they also help manage the project website. So the short end of that is I actually create content for the site, and they have the content stored on their server in Atlanta. So I'll maybe have a chance to show you that. Additional partners include the Southeastern Library Network, or SoLINET. How many of you have heard of SoLINET? I know probably everybody. Okay. SoLINET is a membership organization serving the Southeast as a partner in creating a future where all libraries are valued assets of their communities and cornerstones of the world's information infrastructure. I want to go back and read you the mission statement for the HBCU Library Alliance as well. But SoLINET is responsible for aspects of project administration. Back to the Alliance. The Alliance is a consortium of historically black colleges and university libraries that supports the collaboration of information professionals dedicated to providing an array of resources designed to strengthen HBCUs and their constituents. It's a fairly new consortium, having been formed in 2002. There was a call for participation to 105 historically black college and university library deans and directors, and amazingly 103 of them showed up at one place at one time and gave input about what they'd like to gain from forming a consortium of HBCU libraries. So fairly new, you know, they were a little bit edgy about getting involved in a partnership with a major institution, primarily because this would be their second project, their, I believe, first funded project at the tune of $400,000. So there was a lot that they had to think about, and considering the fact that they were just forming, there was a lot of negotiation that had to take place to identify not only their needs, but also the needs of a project of this kind. Getting back to partners, the Robert W. Woodruff Library of the Atlanta University Center is a nonprofit organization that has a mission to achieve excellence in providing and supporting the learning, teaching, and research needs of Atlanta University Center member institutions. The AUC services Spelman and Morehouse Colleges, the Morehouse Theological Center, Clark Atlanta University, and Morris Brown College in Atlanta. They're primarily responsible for administering the Content DM database. The database is in fact housed at the AU Center, and because of its central location in Atlanta, Georgia, it provides meeting space. So we have our advisory committee meetings there. And the library also serves as a current base of operations for the HBCU Library Alliance. So to our advantage, as we were talking, as I mentioned before, we had to negotiate the project terms. The incoming, at the time when we set out to do the project, the incoming CEO of the AU Center also happened to be the co-founder and president of the HBCU Library Alliance. So we were able to negotiate some things because of that. There are other partners involved in the project, as I mentioned before. Those include the institutional partners who are responsible for production, selection, and digital image and metadata production. They're also responsible for administering their subcontract agreements with Cornell, hiring and training scanning technicians, and reporting their issues, concerns, and of course their successes. There are 10 institutions involved in this phase of the project. They are, as you can see up there on the screen. And one of the wonderful things that we were able to do in writing the grant and thinking about the budget, just sort of overall, what were the needs of the institutions involved? We realized very quickly that obviously if they were going to support production, they needed equipment and software. So with grant funds, each institution received a scanner, a computer workstation, and the necessary software in which to participate in the project. Initially, Cornell staff reviewed the hardware and software specs, and we updated those specs and placed orders for scanners, computers, and digital imaging software. When the hardware arrived, it was configured to meet the needs of the project. With the gracious help of technical staff from CUL's Desktop Services division, we were able to install a ghost image on all of the computers and all of the required software. We were also able to install that. I then had the arduous task of shipping all of those machines to Atlanta, where we held, not Atlanta, but to Morrow, Georgia, to the Georgia Archives, where we held the digital imaging workshop. And the great thing was we were able to set up a lab using the equipment that the participants would eventually receive at their home institutions. So it took about a day. There were staff involved at the Georgia State Archives. They were very helpful. We then were able to actually ship the hardware and the hardware from the Georgia Archives to the individual institutions. So a lot of logistics involved in that sort of thing. As you can see, some of the software that we purchased includes Adobe Photoshop, Abby Fine Reader, Adobe Acrobat, and then of course the Content DM acquisition stations, which I'll talk about in a minute. We also purchased calibration targets and that sort of thing. And because targets are so expensive, we did make recommendations to the institutions about using the Greg Macbeth color patch, you know, and purchasing one of those. I think they are like $56 each. So we were trying to budget properly, and you know, we were able to make some suggestions. Now, what is Content DM? Content DM, as you can see, is a digital collection management system providing tools for organizing, managing, publishing, and searching digital collections over the internet. Content DM is not an acronym. As I was liking to believe when I first heard it, I was trying to, Content DM, what is that? But it's not an acronym. It's basically, as I mentioned, a digital production management system. And it provides a wide variety of, it allows you to handle a wide variety of media formats, including documents, PDFs, images, video, and audio files. And I'll demonstrate for you a little bit later on what some schools are doing with that stuff. It's currently being used by libraries, universities, government agencies, museums, corporations, historical societies, and other organizations. It's a point-and-click interface. It allows users to create collections quickly and provides tiered access to administrative tools so users can maintain collection integrity. This is very important in our case because we have at least three levels, perhaps even four if you include me, of administration for these collections, administration and management for these collections. We have our project liaisons at each individual institution. Those are the individuals who have been trained to use the product, to use the hardware and software. We also have the scanning technicians who work with those project liaisons to actually do the production. And at a next much higher level, we have the database administrator in Atlanta. And then, of course, I have access to all of the collections in Content DM so that I can offer suggestions about things that might need to be changed or edited, or maybe suggest, well, could you find some more metadata for these fields? Two words is not enough, you know? And, you know, so it's each institution is doing something slightly different, and I'll talk in a minute about what we've done here at Cornell to actually help them with the workflow, like creating production guidelines and recommendations, file naming recommendations. So lots of documents involved. Like I mentioned before, the Content DM server is housed at the Woodruff Library, and we purchased the server using funds from the grant. We also purchased, obviously, the software using funds from the grant. If you're wondering how much money we spent on the product, the server, And the first year's maintenance, you're looking at about $21,000. So that includes server, content DM software, and first year's maintenance. The institutional participants are able to use one or more of the 50 licenses that we got with our initial purchase. And just in terms of how this works, the acquisition stations are located at each of the 10 institutions involved. I also have one. I actually have two downloaded. Each institution may only have one license, but what we're doing is we're actually borrowing a license with plans to uninstall the software once the initial production cycle has ended in December. The server, as I mentioned before, where? Lives in Woodruff Library in Atlanta. So what we do, it's much like the Voyager clients, we're able to upload content through the acquisition stations, and that content goes straight to the server there in Atlanta after several approvals and that sort of thing. And the acquisition stations, as I mentioned before, are downloaded on the project computers. Surrogate digital images and metadata are saved and added to the station production queue pending approval. Once approved, those images and the corresponding metadata are uploaded to the server. Now, what's the history of Content DM? According to their website, the product began as a research effort into optimal digital imaging database technologies at the Cisco lab, and that had been operating in collaboration with the University of Washington libraries. Greg Zick, a professor of electrical engineering at the University of Washington, led a team of senior-level programmers and user and web interface designers who had been working in the fields of digital asset management and image and web technologies for over 10 years. In early 2001, as I mentioned, the team began its effort at the Center for Information Systems Operation, Cisco, at the University of Washington Libraries. And the special collections of the libraries were stored in a variety of forms and formats, and demand was building to provide a flexible online access to those resources. So the libraries began to use the Cisco Lab software for fast, full-featured access and management of the collections, and it resulted in the libraries now having more than 75 collections with 90,000 media items either online or in development under Content DM. After extensive field testing, the products resulted from these research and development activities, which were predecessors to Content DM, were made available to organizations outside the university. So it started as an open source software. DMIMA Incorporated, Digital Media Management, there's an acronym for you, the corporate entity responsible for product management and training of Content DM users, was formed in early 2001 to provide support for the rapidly growing community of its users. And currently, the product is implemented worldwide in nearly 50 states and at least, I want to say, up to 15 countries internationally. So there's a lot of interest in the product, and there are a lot of people who are using it. Why did we choose Content DM? Among the many issues that needed to be ironed out to successfully negotiate buy-in from the numerous project participants and then also facilitate collection building, we identified collection management and access as the most critical, if not one of the most critical, but the most critical. We needed to also identify a product that would facilitate the individual needs of the institutions involved, yet offer a common platform upon which all of the partners could learn in a fairly short period of time. And this is where the true beauty of Content DM comes into play. Why Content DM? Well, first of all, we had budgeted upwards of $10,000, $11,000 for the software, and we found Content DM to be affordable. We also learned that it could be quickly set up and easy to use. It had a very intuitive user interface. I actually negotiated with the with OCLC, who is responsible for helping users buy the product, and asked if I could get a test instance in the server set up. So they did that for me, and I was able to use the software quite a bit before the training. So let's say for about 3 months I was testing the software to see if it would meet our needs. We realized, too, that it could be used by more than one institution, so it made it a true collaborative tool that we felt comfortable with. It facilitated the creation and use of common vocabularies. There was a lot of concern, there still is, about are there specific terms that are related to historically black colleges and universities. There's a big marching band culture in HBCU, so perhaps that's something that would need to be added. There are other types of things related to their historical documents and their archives, and perhaps that type of language might need to be added. So Content DM facilitates the creation of common vocabularies. The product is also scalable. We're hoping that we can bring in an additional 10 institutions in another grant round and have them add collections to Content DM. And we can also increase the number of licenses that we currently have that are available to us. It also supports common standards. We looked at other products like Keystone and New Zealand's Greenstone digital library software, but realized that they didn't have all of the features in the neat little box that Content DM provided. The institutions, as I mentioned before, were very concerned about collection management and access. And in other words, they wanted to feel comfortable and confident that they maintained institutional ownership of their digitized collections. HBCU libraries had negative experiences in the past working outside their community on digital imaging projects, and therefore wanted to ensure that ownership was something they could maintain. Copyright was also a major concern, and it could quickly become an issue that would delay the selection and production process. One of the things that we've done to get around that issue is early on in our first advisory committee meeting in January, the library deans and directors decided that they would scan founding documents. So they felt that these were things that all of the archives had and that they were common and unique enough that HBCU community could literally begin to tell a story about themselves by scanning their founding materials. Policies and use continue to be concerns of the advisors, and as was establishing an agreed upon workflow process and common vocabulary. So we're still dealing with these issues, but we have been able to make recommendations about things that the institution should do. When I mentioned supporting common common standards, Content DM can easily integrate Dublin Core and VRA Core. Also supports Open Archives, OAI harvesting. I always forget the I. OAI harvesting, so that institutions could make their metadata available for harvesting, including Z39.50. It's compatible to allow access to digital collections on other Content DM servers from library portals, and able to create custom XML for the export of metadata that supports user-defined fields and formats for greater compatibility with local catalog systems and other applications, which is very important because some of the institutions have these archival materials accessible through their library catalogs, and so it's a very simple process to actually import the metadata that already exists from the catalog MARC records. So what I'm going to do right now is an attempt at a configuration of a new collection. And I'll do that first by opening up the Content DM acquisition station and walking through a series of steps to create a new collection. All of this is actually being done live. So the first thing that happens is you see the window you just saw, trying to show you the ease of use of Content DM. And do you walk through a WYSIWYG wizard that will allow you to create this new collection. So I'm clicking on Next. And I can enter a project name here, let's say Professional CUL Professional Development Week. And that's the server or the URL of the server. All of the collections that are currently in Content DM, if you go to this address, you can actually see them. There are about two from two of the project partners, and mostly what they're doing right now is testing out the images and metadata they want to put there, showing me what they're doing, and asking me for feedback on what they put up there. All right, now my username and password. So you have to go through this process every time you configure a new collection. Okay. And because I have great antivirus software, it's going to ask me several times if I want to block this. Okay, here we go. So now at this point, I know it's a little bit hard to see, I'm actually going to choose Cornell's test collection. So I have a collection up here. I'm going to create a project in that collection. If I misspoke earlier, we work with the database administrator who sets up an initial collection. So each of the institutions has a collection, and then they're able to create separate projects within that collection, which is what I'm going to do. So I'll go down here to CUL Test Collection. And we're going to FTP documents to the server, so I'll just click Finish. All right, now at this point I can decide that I want to add items using the interface, this interface, or I can actually choose to use a web interface, and that's probably what I'm going to do. At this point here, as you can see, I can do a variety of things with projects. So if I were actually opening an existing project, I could do it here, move things around, edit that project. I'm going to go here to administration, and it'll open up this window. And when starting a new project, one of the most important things is that the project is configured properly. So now that I've created this project, I am going to walk you through several of the features of Content DM. So let's go to Collections. The Server tab is grayed out because I don't have access to the server. I have access to items on the server, but not the server itself. If I want to configure my collection, I can do so by clicking on Configure Collection. And it shows me that my collection name is CUL Test Collection. It shows me that my collection status is published. So these things I can change. And this area right here, require permissions. If I wanted to limit access to my collection to my institution, that's where I would edit. So I'm just going to click on Edit, and you'll see all of these places where I can make changes. So let's change the collection name. I think I can do it from here, but I may not be able to, because I think the database administrator set my collection name already on the server, but we'll see. say, CUL PD Week collection. And remember I mentioned collection status, published or not published, so I can say I don't want the world to see what I've got up there right now, and let me limit that to not published. Collection description, demo of content, VM, PD Week. Okay, once I've made the changes I want, I just click on Save Changes. And as you see in the topmost box here towards the left, that the current collection has name has been changed to CUL PD Week Collection, and the collection description field is also filled in now, demo of content DM for PD Week. Fields, if I click on fields, I will see the standard 15 Dublin Core metadata elements. This is the metadata scheme that Content DM uses. All of these field names can be changed. Field names over here far left can be changed, but they're all going to be mapped to the Dublin Core 15. Content DM adds one additional element, and I think there's one additional element, I can't think of what it is right now, but it's added in here. You can also add additional fields, so if you had other fields you wanted to create, you can add them. I'm going to take the first field and edit the field name. Very simple. Instead of image name, I'm going to just type in name. It's going to be mapped to title in Dublin Core. And I can even select this drop-down box and choose additional places where it can be, or other places where it would be mapped. If it's a different data type than a text field, I can choose date or full text search. If I want the field to be searchable, I can choose yes or no. So basically create a hyperlink in that collection's metadata. And folks can search for that particular term across all of the items in the collection. If I want the field hidden, I can choose yes or no here. And if I'm administering a controlled vocabulary, I just click yes, and there's a drop-down box that includes Library of Congress, and I can even import a text file that includes that has a common vocabulary. So I'm going to save the changes. And as you can see, the far left corner, number one, the field name has been changed from image name to name. Let's view collection right now, just to see what's there. Now remember, this is live. I hope it's live. I figure I'd get all of these issues done, live demos and that sort of thing, just in case at the next presentation we have a live demo. You know, at least we can say, well, we know it worked at least once. Earlier this morning, I added an item simply by browsing on my flash drive for a document and just uploading it. So here's a document that's on Content DM available for the world. And this item, I could use an image of the item. So if I wanted the image of the page with its little text and stuff, I could put it there. Or Content DM creates this image right here. If you had some other image that you wanted to represent the item, you could upload that and perhaps link to the actual document. So if I click on the item, I see the metadata first. This again can be configured so you actually see the image and the metadata side by side. If I click on access this item, it's a Word document. And there it is.
Conversely, we actually asked the project participants to use Adobe Acrobat, so they're creating their documents as PDF files. And they're also OCRing documents where they want to provide users with the full text, so they can do that as well. So let's take a look really quickly at some of the other collections that our project participants have created. Some of the collection titles are The Early History of Alabama State University, another, A Celebration of Fisk University Through Photographs, Programs, and Publications, Grambling State University's Black and Gold Collections. We're going to click on that one because I know there's something there, and select Go. And this will take us to Grambling sample documents. Again, these are documents that I'm viewing, looking at their metadata. I'm also just checking out the way some of the documents are scanned. You know, they're also sending me the technical and administrative metadata so that I can view that. And by that, I can tell if you have a TIFF file or if you have a preservation file and you've saved it as a JPEG, shame on you. We want to create TIFF files here, and I can look at file sizes in the technical admin metadata spreadsheet and determine through looking at the DPI, we recommended resolution requirements and all of those sorts of things. I can look at all of that stuff and get a sense for what the institutions are doing. I'm also doing site visits. So I'm visiting 10 different universities, and I've just done the first two Fisk and Tennessee State because they're both in Nashville, and I'll be going to probably Southern and Grambling in Louisiana, hopefully before the hurricane season hits. And so, you know, here's an example of a document about one of the presidents here. This was the acting president before their current president, who is also a Cornell graduate. Dr. Horace Judson. So this guy came before him, he was acting president, and as you can see, here's a nice example of one of their documents. And if you scroll down in the image, you can see the bottom of the page. Okay. And at the very bottom here, here's the image with metadata, and you can click on these terms and identify additional images like those. Okay. Let's look at one more example and then I'll show you what other schools are doing. Southern University in Baton Rouge. Okay. Here's an example of you know, what I'm probably going to say is it might be nice if you have scanned pages that look appealing, or if you have the covers of the monographs, might be nice to add those instead of having this arbitrary PDF image here on the left. Here are some images that they've scanned, if I can get them. Yeah, they have a few pages so far. Not all of them are the greatest quality. Let's see this guy, Julius Rosenwald. Or let's not. Let's go to the document. Perhaps there's another example. No? Maybe I didn't get a time to load. One of the things we asked the here we go. One of the things we asked folks to do was take into consideration describing where the image is from at the bottom of the page. Again, people were concerned about ownership and making sure folks knew that they own the images. So we discussed at our last meeting. Peter Hurdle did a presentation on copyright. And access, we discussed adding digital watermarks to the headers of the images, that sort of thing. So big issue for folks. They want to make sure folks know. So here at the bottom of the page, you see Archives Department, Southern University. However, as we know, if somebody wanted this image, they could just crop that out, right? So let's take a look. Now, just before we leave here, I'm going to go home and show you the difference between this page and something I'm going to show you at other institutions. What you're seeing now is the default interface for ContentDM. There are some really awesome templates that you can use in ContentDM and configure so that the collection appears to be coming from your own home site. What we'll probably have is the HBCU Library Alliance, where the web page for the project is hosted, will have a gateway page that will be configured in some of the ways I'm going to show you. And you won't see this sort of bland page. You'll see something a lot better. I'm going to take a second and go by the HBCU Library Alliance page. In the production page, I'll make my slides available for you on the PD website, so you'll be able to see what I talked about today. So this site was hosted at here in IRIS, or at IRIS first, and then once we were able to, we asked the Alliance to take over management of it. So I've created all of these documents or linked to a variety of documents that would help the participants with the production process. And you can go to this site and find out what we're doing. Two panel presentations at ALA coming up. Lots of other presentations. There are a variety of documents that we've created for participants. And production guidelines. There's a scanning master images document in PDF. Folks can look at that and go step by step and use these steps in the production process. Okay. Now let's go to the ContentDM website quickly. Actually, I linked from my presentation to these things. Okay. Appalachia College Association is, we have an advisor from Appalachia College, the Digital Library of Appalachia Project, who is giving us a lot of ideas about ways in which we can configure our collections. They have, their project is very similar to ours. We actually modeled on their project. And you go to their site, you can see some of what they've done. So this is that interface I was telling you about where you saw quick search. These are boxes you can turn in on or off. Browse by library, browse by topic, and some other things. You can choose a library. They have a variety of libraries involved in their project. Here, for example, Berea College. And you can go to their collection. In our case, you'll access the ContentDM collections from the Alliance site, and you will go to perhaps the homepage of the library where they have a link to their collections. Or the institution may have a similar interface to the Alliance's interface, and you can link to all of the collections. So we're leaving it up to them as far as how far they want to take it. And again, this interface looks very familiar to you. I just showed you how the collections can appear on individual sites. You can browse also by topic. And what they've done is they used one of the customizable templates to create this sort of about page, a gateway to the various documents on education. We go to vocational and agricultural, you then end up at the place where those documents live. Another neat thing about ContentDM is this, when they want to turn it on, when the institution wants to turn it on, there's this add to favorites. You can barely see it here. It should have used a different font color. Say you have faculty members who want to use the collections that you've created or one of the projects within your collection, they can go to Add to Favorites and create their own customizable resource page and then use those items in their classrooms. So it's a great feature. Here's yet another interface, one we like a lot better. The Utah Academic Library Consortium has a huge number of partners involved in their collections, in collection development. And as you can see, these are the various collections, and they were submitted by these institutions here below. So Brigham Young, Murray City Public Library, Topaz Museum. You have a variety of people involved. Let's take a look at one of the Vincent Institute theses at Brigham Young. And they've done a very nice job with creating an interface for their collections. Okay, so this again is that customizable interface that you can use. We've encouraged each of the institutions to create their own customizable interfaces using their own institutional logos and that sort of thing. If we browse their collections, again, we get back to a similar interface that you can view in a number of ways. The grid view is default on this particular site. There's also a thumbnail view. Bibliographic view. Or you can just view by titles. Cool thing is they've turned on the My Favorites tab. So if I select, I think I can do it this way. If I select a couple of collections or items and click on My Favorites, or I think I have to choose My Favorites and then browse and then add images to My Favorites. But either way, you see a number of ways in which the product has been implemented. And we won't know really until the end, when all is said and done, how well it worked for folks. There have been a couple issues with the product. This is version 4.1 that's been released. There's a huge user community, everything from developers who are developing on top of ContentDM to people who are adding collections and items to their own servers. And you can learn more about ContentDM at contentdm.com. And they don't only offer a single site server, which is what we purchased for our project. They offer a multi-site server, so if we wanted other institutions to be able to host a server, they could do that as well. And I have just about 10 minutes, I believe, for questions. So if you'd like to ask some, I'd be happy to take them at this point. Yeah.
I'm really interested in the selection issues. You mentioned that people decided to start out with their own university or college documents. Are most people going to be putting up archives? Are people going to be putting up manuscripts, published materials?
We have an extensive list of things that we've suggested folks put up. And again, that's available on our project website. We've suggested that folks primarily use things that would demonstrate or illustrate how the institution was founded. So campus charters, if there were buildings that are particularly of historic value, founding buildings, the first building on campus. We have encouraged folks to think about firsts, perhaps the first graduating class or the first president. One of the interesting things that came up out of this conversation about founding documents is that the library director said, oh, well, you know, I remember, or I know that, these are some examples of the types of things we've asked people to put up. So I did a lot of research in RMC and tried to determine what would Cornell consider to be founding documents. And there were several books about Cornell, the history of Cornell, and basically just looked a lot at the index in those documents, looked at you know, talked to Elaine and said, hey, what do you consider to be founding documents? There was an early report by, I think, one of or the first archivist here at Cornell, and she talked about a lot of the things that were in the collection, in the archives collection.
So everything from speeches to reports, minutes from first board meetings, and that sort of thing.
Those are the types of things. And again, you can find this list online.
And so all the selections are done by the individual institutions?
Yes.
They're all done individually.
Yep.
And are they accessible outside this consortium? Are they available on Google, or will they be?
Well, again, we're looking at institutions that have been, all the institutions were chosen in part because they'd either been involved in a digitization project before, or they had a lot of administrative and university support for getting involved in one. So for many of these schools, this is the first time that they've done something like this. Particularly if they've done it before, this is probably the first time they've done it with extensive training and support. As I mentioned before, the institutions were very concerned about ownership, and some of them had been in relationships with majority institutions before, or for-profit entities, and found that once they said, yes, I will allow you to come into my archives and we will choose some items for your project, there are times when credit wasn't even given to the institution for actually owning the materials. So those bad experiences gave us, Cornell, an opportunity to walk in and say, hey, why don't we teach you how to fish, and then you can do it yourselves. So, yeah.
I was curious what kind of support ConnectDM has for cross-collection searching. Mm-hmm. It seems like, in your case, some people are interested in a specific institution, but
yeah,
just as well, people may be interested in finding documents across
all of the institutions involved. I think that there is a, as I mentioned before, there's development being done on Z39.50. I believe, I can't remember which institution is actually developing it, but there is and will be an opportunity to search across all of the collections or all of the institutions and organizations that are using ContentDM, if that answers your question.
It looked like the first page of that Utah site.
Yeah.
Was that providing cross-collection?
Yes, yes. So within the Utah site, all of those member institutions that had collections that lived on that server, you can actually search across all of them, or you can browse across all of them.
And do you know, in that case, is that something that they worked out using the Z3950, for example, or was that something that's sort of provided?
The Z3950, and I'll backtrack, mm-hmm, is going to allow you perhaps to search across any institution's collection, mm-hmm, that you, any institution that uses ContentDM, period. So it doesn't have to be limited to just one consortium or one institution. In the case of Utah, I believe what they did is they just sort of did what we're planning to do, which is flip a switch and say, now you can browse or search across all of the collections in the HBCU project. So there is a capability to do that. That was another major issue. Folks said, well, we don't necessarily want to appear as though we're all one big group just yet. You know, we want to test this out, make our users happy at our individual institutions, and then, as I mentioned, it's scalable, so we'll be able to literally just, you know, turn on some code and allow for cross-collection searching. Yeah. Meta?
I'm curious about things like sound recordings and film footage.
Yeah.
Can you handle that?
Yep.
So that's,
yep,
also possible.
That is possible. There are a couple of collections on the ContentDM website that actually have sound recordings up, and again, sound recordings in a variety of formats as well.
It's fairly easy to.
Yeah, yeah. And you, in the same way you import an image, you can import video or audio. Any other questions?
I'm also curious too, what exactly is your relationship with OCLC and ContentDM?
OCLC sells the product, basically.
Okay, so you do the marketing.
They do the marketing, they sell the product. When I went to purchase ContentDM, I assumed I could just go through the Woodruff Library because that's where the product was going to live. But I learned from Ron Gardner, who actually manages, Ron Gardner is the person who is at OCLC who manages this process. He said, no, you buy the product from OCLC, we will build the institution, and then the institution pays for the product. So it kind of screwed up our subcontracts, but we were able to make it work. And that's how, that's the regional OCLC service provider sells the product. So, no other questions. All right. Well, like I said, I'll make this stuff available to you guys, and I appreciate your coming. And thank you. Have a great rest of PD week.